right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of Need Some Introduction. In today's episode, we will be discussing the season finale of Dexter New Blood. Boy, we got lots to talk about, Sona.
That's good.
Also, for our sociopath of the week, something I'm more looking forward to have this conversation with you, Sona. We will be talking about Yellow Jackets yet again, which is wrapping up next week, also on Showtime. So anybody who's listening to our Dexter recaps, please do watch Yellow Jackets and join us next week. We'll be covering that finale. And honestly, I don't even know which of the women on the show is going through the sociopath of the week. I had like multiple options.
So it's a rough one this week.
It really is a rough one this week. Yeah, I flipped a coin pretty much. So that conversation is coming later. But to start things off, we will be discussing Dexter New Blood, Sins of the Father, which is the season finale of this first season of this show. Before any of that, as usual, make sure you follow us so that you get notifications when these episodes are available. I just had a conversation with my friend Ian about the Get Back documentary on Disney Plus, the Beatles documentary. And if you did follow us on Spotify, you get to hear the actual tracks we're discussing. We include the tracks in that. So it's something, a feature that you get on Spotify. So if you do have Spotify, listen to those episodes there. You get a little extra content. And on Spotify, now you can actually give us a review. So if you're listening to us on iTunes or on Apple Podcasts, or if you're listening to us on Spotify, you can now give us a rating. So please do click on the dot, dot, dot on our show and give us a 5-star review. It helps grow the audience. And of course, if anyone has any feedback about Dexter, I'd love to hear from people, by the way, about this finale. Please reach out to us at needsomeintroduction@gmail.com. And of course, recommend this to your friends. The easiest way to help us grow our audience. Before we get into the actual episode for today, I have a big question, which, Sona, tell me about your COVID experience.
Oh, I wish I hadn't had a COVID experience to share, but here I am. Day 10 of my quarantine, actually. So, but only day 8 for our 4-year-old, which means we are all stuck together in this 900 square foot apartment for another 2 days.
Oh, no.
The highest praise I can give is it's not as bad as the flu.
Okay.
I know many, many people who had very minor symptoms, barely knew they had it, cleared it out of their system in just a few days. That was not me or my husband. My kid, though, you know, he barely seems to have had it, which is a great combination when two people feel like crap and the 4-year-old feels just fine.
That's right. Just wants to play all day long.
It's been everything that you can imagine. The only good thing, I guess, is that, like, I really felt we have been trying to outrun this for a very long time. And now maybe I can feel a little bit of relief that for the very immediate future, we can be a little bit less stressed until my kid turns 5 and can get his vaccine. So
that's good to hear, too. That's right.
That's the upside, I guess.
And on the positive side as well, the Omicron is burning through the population so quickly, this variant, that you see in London, where this had one of the first big spikes, their numbers are crashing. And even here in the US, like in Washington, D.C., which had the first big wave of their hospitals filled up just in the past like 5-6 days, the daily case rate is dropping like 10-15% over the course of just, you know, it's dropping 3-4% a day, pretty much. So This is, you know, burning through the population very, very quickly. But to your point, you've had this now. That's our neighbors basically said the same thing last night. We had dinner with them and they also just got hit with this as well. The whole family, they had to skip Christmas and they had like a late Christmas. And they said the same thing. They're like, well, now, you know, for the next few months, you know, we basically don't have to worry about this anymore. And at least with the Omicron, it's going to burn through so quickly that you won't have any kind of boomerang effect. There could be other variants, but I would hope that, or the pattern seems to be that they get milder over time. So hopefully we,
if this kid gets sent home for another 10-day quarantine because he's a close contact,
oh boy,
especially knowing he just had it, if he gets another mandatory quarantine, like just for being in close contact, I'm going to lose it. Just a heads up.
Oh, that's the other thing. It's a miraculous that right here in Jersey, at least in this part of Jersey, because our neighbors, the husband is a teacher, and they're basically going remote now. And At least here, still, we have the kids in school. But for example, they tried to do it in Chicago, where Sydney lives. The teachers, you know, you've probably heard about it. The teachers basically just said, we're not going to teach anymore. Yeah. So the kids are just stuck home indefinitely, and there's no plan to reopen the school. So I guess it could always be worse.
It can always be worse. So just cross your fingers for us, please, everybody. Anybody listening, please. I can take all the good vibes. 2022 really started out with a bang.
And I feel like this is every single year. I'm like, well, next year can't be worse.
I know.
Let's see. That being said, I mean, this is actually probably not worse than last year. My wife works in the hospital, and she's saying that, yes, like every bed is, she said she went into like the ICU and like every single bed is occupied, but the nurses are all kind of like chill. They're like, yeah, they're just sitting here. They like suck on an oxygen bag for, you know, like 6 or 7 hours. Sometimes you're here for a day and then they go back home, which is not what happened last year. These people did not leave the hospital. Right. That's, so it's a very, very different experience. There's a lot of them, but they're nowhere near as sick as before. Yeah. So it could always be worse, right? So if you're here and you don't want to get spoiled on the Dexter finale, but you just want to hear our recap and conversation about Yellow Jackets, then jump ahead about 20 minutes. The void you should know me better than that. I should live a song for leaving you behind. All right, with that out of the way, we can get to this very, very meaty conversation about this excellent wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Finale of the Dexter show. Definitely, you know, feel free to interject, but I'm going to try to go through the plot pretty quickly because I think we can knock it out pretty quick, because then I just want to kind of talk about like WTF on this whole thing, right?
Okay.
And maybe you have a different opinion than I do. So, you know, I'm open to that conversation because I do think that there's moments in this episode that were pretty solid. So we open with Molly on her podcast talking about the Bay Harbor Butcher. So it's nice to see her have one more cameo here in the show.
Poor Molly.
Yeah, poor Molly indeed. Another waste. I mean, well, I'll save that for the end. I'm not going to get negative right away. And then we see Dexter's at the remains of his home, pretty much picking up exactly where we were last week. We hear in voiceover, this is actually a point that I made a note of, that Dexter's like saying, oh, I really do. Like, he really does like these people, but he even makes a joke. You know, there's a lot of jokes in this episode, by the way, which is weird considering where things land at the end. But he's making a joke saying like, oh, these people are so nice. They're so helpful to the serial killer and his son, you know, like this kind of jokiness, that kind of internal monologue that we've gotten used to on the show. And then he tells Harrison, you know, it's time for us to move out. Like, we can't stay here. And Harrison's like, what do you mean? I just got here and my friends are here. And Dexter's like, well, I can't teach you the code and we can't do what we need to do if we don't leave here. So this kind of rubs Harrison the wrong way a little bit. They take off and Angela, importantly here, finds in the fire, these damn screws will not melt in fires, apparently.
Yeah.
One of the screws in the remains of the house. And that leads to her arresting Dexter. You know, she runs into him in his home because she's like, he's basically staying there with Harrison and the family. She arrests him. And then she starts questioning him at the police station. And she puts all her cards on the table. She goes, you know, maybe you can say that Matt's death. Maybe you confronted him. Maybe this was self-defense. Maybe you can get away with it. But I'm definitely going to prosecute you. And then I'm definitely going to try to get you be prosecuted for the Bay Harbor Butcher crimes as well. So this, you know, makes Dexter a little bit wary, but Dexter's pretty confident at this point. And as a matter of fact, when Harrison comes and confronts him, he says, I've gotten out of worse in the past. And it is kind of crazy, some of these situations he got out of in the past. So there's a little self-commentary there. And he also says that the world needs that. You know, I'm going to get out of this and we're going to run away together and the world needs us. So Angela reaches out to Angel again from Angel Bautista from the original Recipe Dexter show. She mentions, were there any other suspects ever for the Bay Harbor Butcher murders? And he mentions, well, you know, my wife actually suspected it might be this guy, Dexter Morgan, but he's dead. Well, no, he's not. Angela sends him a photograph, right? And Angel, of course, immediately packs up his murder folder about Maria's death and is like, yes. I'm on the next plane to
in the top drawer right in front, even though this is like a decade has passed at this point, but okay.
Well, I mean, but give it, I would definitely know where that folder was considering the situation. So then she goes and confronts Dexter and starts telling him, you know, hey, look, you know, I talked to Angel, and she mentions, you know, I, what do they call it? The wheel mark on the neck from the syringe, mm-hmm. where he's drugging these people with ketamine. Mm-hmm. And apparently this is a smoking gun. I mean, like, I'm not sure it would be, and we can get into that because I have my, like, I have a lot of, you know, nits to pick here, as once again. But she tells him, you know, you're going to go down for this one way or the other. We can send you back to Florida. And obviously she's hurt, right? She dated this guy. She trusted this guy. Mm-hmm. Oh, and then he goes, you know what? Turn off the camera and I'll tell you what you need to know. So she turns off the camera. And he says, I can solve all those crimes over there on the board. I found all those girls. And of course, she takes the bait. She can't not take the bait. And she leaves and leaves Dexter behind with Logan. And Logan lets his guard down just a little bit. And mm-hmm. Dexter ends up killing Logan, right? Asks him for the keys. Logan tries to reach for his gun. And Dexter goes, well, I got to kill this guy. And he did. And he's like, it's your own fault. I told you not to take your gun. Because, of course, always trust a serial killer. But it's always someone else's fault. And Dexter takes Logan's phone, calls his son. And his son, of course, thinks it's the coach calling him and says, hey, you know, go meet me where the stag was shot originally. And they meet up there eventually. As soon as he gets there, Harrison goes, hold on a second. What happened to Logan? Dexter doesn't lie. He tells him what happened. It basically is the only way he could get out of there. I had to do it. And then this, you know, this is the culminating moment of the whole season, I guess, that he calls him out on that. And he says, well, you killed him. What about the code? And he goes, well, you know, he goes, I need to be with you. He tells his son, I need to be with you. And he goes, you don't understand. We can't be together. They're going to take me to Florida. I could die. They have the death penalty. And Harrison says, well, maybe you deserve to die. Mm-hmm. This might resonate with you, by the way, with, you know, I know this has been a pet peeve of yours that there's no empathy in this show for this kind of like nurture versus a nature conversation. And there's a little bit of lip service paid here, right? Yeah. Where Harrison goes, you know why I'm so messed up? Because you abandoned me multiple times, right? So he really does call him out. This is a pretty good scene, actually, this whole entire thing. And Dexter says he's right, but I have to leave. I can't be here. I'm going to go. And of course, Harrison pulls out the gun, points it at him and says, I can't let you go. Dexter says, you have to take the safety off. So he does. He talks him through it. And it's basically like, now just breathe. Pull the trigger. He does it, kills Dexter. And as Dexter's like dying breath, he says, you did good. You did good. Dexter, before this happens, by the way, flashes all the nice people that he died or inadvertently or directly murdered in his lifetime, or at least in the course of the show, and probably more so than beyond this in his lifetime. Oh, and he has like a little moment with Ghost Deb, who's there holding his hand as he's dying. But after Angela takes the bait and leaves to go find all those bodies. Obviously, this is a very important point. And she goes and finds where all the girls have been embalmed and preserved. And then she calls to basically get back up. And they do call like all the police in the area. But she also tries to reach out to Logan. She realizes right away that Logan's been, you know, is in trouble, at least if not dead. She shows up at the police station. And that's when she discovers that Logan is dead and heads out. She's a good detective. She figures out that they're going to have this meeting right there, where the stag was originally found. Angela shows up, basically tells him to drop the gun. Harrison has a whole story ready to go, like saying, which most of it is true, by the way, but this kind of always seems to be Harrison's pattern where there's, you know, he's 80% truth and 20% fudging the truth. Mm. But he says, you know, he killed Coach. He came here and I had to shoot him. And he puts his arms out, like, arrest me. And Angela just gives him money and says, get out of here. So he does. And he drives away and has found a letter, pretty touching letter from Dexter to Hannah. And then talks about, like, you know, that he's better off without me. And basically ties things up with saying that you have to let me die so that my son can live. Is what he wraps things up with on that note. And Harrison reads it. And I guess, you know, that's his final interaction with his father. And he drives away as like, all the police in the area are driving and the Nationals playing on the soundtrack. It's a good National song. I actually listened to it after I watched the episode because I'd forgotten about that song. And that's it. That's the end of the season. Harrison, like I speculated last week, not in as satisfying a way as I expected, by the way, you know, had to off Dexter because that's the code, right?
But okay. Didn't Harrison have this note all along? That was my impression.
I was confused by that too. I was thinking the same thing. I think this is a note that was in Dexter's bag, I think. And it was a note that Dexter had. But he had written it to Hannah, right?
Right. And I thought they made several references to like, take your things and get out. Take your things and get out. So I thought this was in his bag was how I read it.
And he had that note, right? He had an envelope, like kind of like a an old, like an aged envelope like that, that he showed that is like when he had seen the picture of Dexter and had basically used that to track down. So I think you're right. I think you're right. This is not a Dexter note that he like never sent to Hannah. Right. This that is.
I had. And then, I mean, I know I'm pinning a lot here on the last 30 seconds of the show.
Yeah.
But I thought then, and I am confused about it. This could very well be wrong. Then I thought that maybe what we were supposed to be inferring from that is that all of these accusations against Dexter were a little bit false and that he totally knew why Dexter did what he did all along.
That's a good point because he really does seem earnest. Yeah, this is very confusing to me because
it is confusing.
When I saw the show, I'm like, this is the note that Harrison has had the whole time. And then in retrospect, as I was writing my notes for this conversation, I rewrote that. That was like Dexter's bag, his pack. And that was a note that he had maybe never sent to Hannah or something like that.
Specifically said, unless Harrison starts to show evidence of being the same as I am,
right,
then you should contact me.
Exactly. So now you're absolutely correct. Once again, another, I think, potentially a mistake in the show is because I don't think these things are intentional. I often felt in this show that episodes were being written almost without the context of the previous episodes. Like maybe they all knew the outline for the season, but not the specifics of the other scripts. And this is a perfect example of it. There is explicitly a scene just a couple episodes ago where Harrison says, "You knew what I was the whole time. That's why you ran away." And like, you know, this is like a breaking point for Harrison. And like you said, if he had this note, then he knew full well that.
I mean, the note totally spelled out why Dexter did what he did, what he was thinking, that he loved Harrison to the moon and back and was doing this, he believed, for his own good. And that if they were ever in that situation, that specific situation, that Dexter and Harrison seem to have that connection, that she should find him. I put a different spin on everything that Harrison said. And like, is he a sociopath in that like he knew this all along and was just playing it up? I don't know. I'm confused, man. I'm confused.
That's what's so bizarre, exactly what you're saying. It only makes things worse for me in interpreting this because I feel like they were playing that whole thing with Harrison, like, is he a good guy? Is he a bad guy? Like, is he just a confused teen or is he a true sociopath? And they keep playing back and forth. And I feel like they're still playing that here at the very end. To what effect? Like, to what point? Like, what does that get you? Like you said, if we're now saying, haha, he knew this whole time. But then that like scene doesn't work because he's obviously very sad in the car reviewing that. But that doesn't make sense either because he pulls out the note and it's like he's reading it as he's leaving town. And it's very affecting to him. Like, are we supposed to believe that he's reading this for like the 10th or 15th time? Like, I don't understand how that makes any sense. It just doesn't make any sense.
All right. Well, I don't know what to do with this at this point. Like, it makes a big difference what the deal with the note is, right? Uh-huh. Like, because maybe he truly is a sociopath who came back to kill his dad and was waiting for his moment.
Right.
Or maybe not.
Right. Okay, so I'm going to tell you a couple of things and to maybe provide context to this conversation, maybe not. But the first one is that I always go to Internet Movie Database, which is just a website and an app where you can like rate your movies and things like that. They kind of do a very good job in general, do a good job of like keeping the trolls off the boards and stuff like that because they verify everyone's, you know, identity. So it's a pretty good barometer for what people are thinking and feeling at any given time. So what's shocking to me about this Dexter show is that I felt episode to episode that the show was okay to mediocre. I give it a B to a C from episode to episode throughout this whole entire season. But fans of the show, and there's been many of them, have been giving these episodes like a 9.5, a 9.7, which is bananas because it's, first of all, it's a very popular show, has thousands and thousands of reviews, and it's getting 9 point somethings. It's like, so that means that everybody who rated this gave it a 10 or a 9. Like, what are you talking about, right? Like, where are the at least sixes and sevens? But here's the funny thing about it. All season long, another home run, 9.5, right? And now on the last episode, it's like 1. This show is garbage. So first of all, the other episodes were not 10s. And this episode is probably not a 1, by the way. But I love how everybody's just like, now it's a 1. It's terrible, right? So I just like the total whiplash on the fan reaction. That's the first thing I wanted to bring up. Beyond that, it's like, where's your reaction? Are you like, is this a 1 for you too? Or is this, where are you with this?
No, this is more or less in line with the rest of the series for me.
Right.
Which I would put B, B plus.
Okay.
I wasn't terribly let down by the finale. I also didn't find it particularly satisfying because I had so much confusion about the last 30 seconds.
So my second question to you is that the showrunner has been doing the media rounds today, and I was doing a little research. I didn't do any research before I watched the show, by the way, because I don't want any spoilers.
I didn't either, although maybe I should have read some reviews so I could understand the ending, but yeah.
Well, I actually read just one recap of the ending, and they gave no clarity on that either. Okay. But I did read the interview just right before this conversation with the showrunner, and here's the other piece of information I want to let you know, that he's waiting for Showtime to give him the green light for next season, where we follow Harrison to California, maybe to go meet with the guy from You, possibly, with Ghost Dex. Are you going to watch that show?
Obviously, Ghost Dex. I mean, then he is a sociopath, right? Otherwise, there's no show.
Well, I think he left. I think that's why I wanted to bring that up, for the fact that maybe that's why they're toying with this duality still in him, because I guess that's going to be, you know, that was the tension in Dexter, right? The original Recipe Dexter. And I mean, he overtly says this, by the way. He says that Dexter was a serial killer that liked to kill people, and the code was the way he siphoned that off. And he's saying that Harrison, this is his interpretation, Harrison is like an idealist, right? So even though he's a sociopath, and obviously he's able to kill people when he gets mad or whatever, that at the same time, he really is saying, like, I'm going to go and kill people because they're bad people, right? So I don't know if that's really legitimately true, even in the show he's written, but this is what the showrunner's excuse is that this is a different kind of vigilante, basically. He made an analogy, by the way, that is an interesting analogy that I hadn't thought about, where he said it's Batman and Robin, right? Batman is like the jaded older guy who says, this is how it is. It doesn't matter if you bend the rules. And Robin's like the idealistic version of it, because, you know, Batman is a vigilante too. So I'm like, wow, I didn't think about the Batman and Robin. So thanks for that. It does give me some insight into these characters. But first of all, I'm not going to watch next season. That's my opinion. And second of all, I don't know if they really pulled it off, to be honest. So even this season.
Yeah, I don't know. In my mind, it's almost a distinction without a difference. I don't.
Yeah.
It's not.
No, I agree.
It's not enough of a new spin on it to me to make it, like, novel.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, that Harrison actor, to me, I have no problem with him, but he's not compelling enough that I need to watch him more.
Right.
I mean, I guess I do find Michael C. Hall very compelling, but I'm not sure if I would in the ghost realm.
Yeah. Because he's not. Yeah. It's like as annoying as the Deb character is here, the ghost Deb character is like, you can't really be vested in something that's a figment of someone's imagination. Yeah. Right? And that's the other thing that doesn't make sense. Right. You'll be like, oh, you bring Michael C. Hall back as like Ghost Dex. But I'm like, are the fans going to turn out to see that? Like, I don't know if that's going to, you know?
About that.
And my last question to you, unless you have anything else you wanted to talk about, it seems like we probably don't have too much to cover here.
Extraneous Millionaire was truly extraneous.
Yeah. What was up with that? Right.
Yeah.
Oh, but the last question was, it wasn't that one, although there are so many plot holes here that, you know, and I don't know if it's just messy plotting. Like, my gut instinct, and I've been feeling this throughout the season, I really feel like they had a much bigger story planned earlier on, and then they couldn't figure out how to do it. And they just basically said, well, let's just, you know, I was envisioning a real confrontation between him and Dexter, like literally like Dexter wrapped up like one of the serial killers, drugged by Harrison, and Harrison like confronting him with all the sins he's committed. Dexter basically accepting, like for the first time, we saw these people right before they died, like fighting, saying that, no, this isn't true. And Dexter being like, you're right, I accept this. And like a more ceremonial death, instead of him just being like, I'm going to run away. You're going to shoot me in the front or in the back? It didn't feel like in the style of Dexter at all, like none of it. And like I discussed many times before, I just feel it's so rushed. There's no reason this thing had to happen like in a 2-week period. They could have just spread it out, and it just, they added nothing by making it so compact. And it makes it ridiculous too, right? Like, you know, Kurt only has how many girls down there? I mean, he killed 3 girls in 3 days. Like, I mean, there should be way more than 25 girls down there. There should be like, you know, 500 girls down here.
Seriously.
So is this... if this is the end of Dexter truly, and there's no continuation of the storyline, and like I said, you know, even having a ghost Dex really does not extend the Dexter mythology, because at that point he's just a supporting character. So do you feel, as bad as the finale of season 8 was, do you think this is a better finale than that one, or what do you feel?
I don't vividly recall the finale of the regular series. I think this might have been better. I'm not sure though.
The finale was, I mean, he talks about it here. He takes Deb out of the hospital. There's a hurricane coming, so they're trying to like clear the hospital. He runs out with her on a gurney somehow. He puts her onto the boat he's been using, and he goes out to sea, goes into this giant CGI like squall of water and rain. And then we like have this, we just see we're up in the Pacific Northwest somewhere. And we see him inside of a cabin, right? So that was the finale. Like, you know, his, you know, Deb dies, he survives somehow, and at some point in the future is just living by himself in making penance somewhere.
I guess this was better.
I don't know if it was more satisfying to me. I mean, at least he's dead, but I don't, even like, you know, if he supposedly came to terms with what he's done, I feel like, you know, the 3 seconds of flashbacks that we see in his mind for that, you know, right before he dies, I don't know. I don't know. Hmm. Indeed.
Well, here we are. Baby, I'd like a thing to a kiss from a rose on the grave. Ooh, the more I get, I feel stranger it feels, yeah. And now that your rose is in bloom, a light hits the gloom on the grave.
I had seen Yellow Jackets, and I was only like an episode 2 or something when I recommended it to you, and then kind of put it aside for a long time, but you hadn't seen any of it. So tell me, I mean, you binged the whole thing, so I guess you must have liked
yeah,
some extent.
It afforded me the opportunity to binge watch Yellow Jackets.
Thank you, COVID.
So there's an upside. You know, I've really been enjoying it. I think, you know, they've got a lot of great actresses. The premise is very compelling. I have some questions about how I would not like to see there be a supernatural component here. So I hope there is not, and it's just all magic mushrooms. But one episode left, is that right?
Just one more, yeah.
Yeah, just one episode left. So let's see. But I think it got renewed for season 2, right? Did I hear that?
One thing that got me motivated to finally catch up on it, they had renewed it for season 2. So I'm like, okay, good. Like sometimes I don't like committing to something that's not coming back, especially if they leave things on like a cliffhanger and then it ends, you know, that's pretty disappointing. And the second thing was that, you know, I hadn't been watching the show from week to week, but it was the show that, like, for example, was turning into memes. You know, it was generating a lot of chatter on the internet, basically. Mm-hmm. So it had been like, you know, one of those hits that was growing like in a natural way. It motivated me to binge it myself. So I did catch up on it last week around the same time you were binging it as well. But do you want to give a stab at a season recap, or you want me to help you walk you through it? Or why don't you, what you want to start and then I can.
The recap, your lane, not mine. let's see. Okay. So there's this soccer team. High school girls, they're going to nationals in Seattle. They get on the plane, which is making a detour because of weather. They end up crashing in the Canadian Rockies, are so sure that someone is going to come rescue them, but unbeknownst to them, possibly the most psychotic of them all. I don't know. It's maybe going to be a tight race at the end. Has right. broken the black box so that no one will ever be able to find them, especially probably because they're in Canada and nobody's really looking in Canada. So, and then in the meantime, we are flashing back and forth with some of the survivors of that plane crash and seeing what their lives are right now as middle-aged women that are, you know, in various degrees and stages of post-traumatic stress, I guess, yes. from the whole situation, and going back and forth. And they are being played by Juliet Lewis and Melanie Lynskey.
Yeah.
And I don't remember Thaisa. I don't remember that actress's name. And Christina Ricci.
Christina Ricci and Tawny Cypress is Thaisa.
Gotcha.
And these girls, the girls are from New Jersey, by the way. And at least these four women, and that's a question. I have big questions I have for you. Although a lot of them got answered this week. But they still live in New Jersey. At least these four girls still live in New Jersey, or women, I should say.
Yeah. And they are being blackmailed by somebody who seems to knows about something very, very dark that happened during the 18 months that they were stranded in the mountains. And we are flashing back and forth to see what that thing is, which clearly involves some sort of cannibalism of some sort. Also seeing how their relationships are fracturing and developing under this stress of being a plane crash survivor and stranded.
And they're trying to cover this up, right? A big strain in the present tense is that they're trying to keep all this stuff from coming out.
Yes.
And I want to be, you know, I know you got scared and my wife got scared off by the whole cannibalism thing. My wife found that first episode so intense that she like had problems sleeping that night. So it is, I'm a fan of horror movies, so it didn't bother me in the way it bothered her. She may be an overly empathetic person, but I just want to be clear about maybe that turns people off. It is not a show where you're watching cannibalism on a regular basis. As a matter of fact, there has been absolutely no cannibalism. I would argue that that's an implication implied that there's cannibalism. And even in the show itself, there's people keep making jokes about like you guys ate each other, right? Right. And it's not even explicitly said at any point in the show. So if we're 100% sure that we were eating, you know, it's implied, obviously, but is it true that that was cannibalism or whether they were just eating some other animal? I'm not saying that cannibalism didn't happen. I just don't want people to think that that's the show about cannibalism because we've seen none of it actually in the show, right?
I tend to watch it for that reason. And I agree. Opening at that first episode was very disturbing. I don't think I would have continued watching it if it stayed at that level. I can distance myself from it very easily. So it's not like I had problems sleeping, but it's just not something that I enjoy watching. Right. It's not how I would choose to spend my free time. if it was very heavy into the cannibalism. So, I mean, in broad strokes, that's what's going on. There's so much more detail, you know, that I'm trying to not get mired down in to give a season overview.
I thought that was a good job that you gave there at the high level. And then we could dig into these because I think a lot of these specific details I want to get into are questions I have for you and questions the show haven't yet answered anyway. And also that I think it's almost a spoiler-free review that you just gave. There's there's one little tidbit you gave, which one of the girls smashed the flight recorder, I won't even say who it is, but I would say that if that intrigues you, and I highly recommend the show, then go and listen to it. But from now on, we're just going to spoil everything that's happened through episode 9, which is most of what's going to happen in this season, right? So we're going to spoil almost everything at this point. So my first question I had for you is, these girls all have some serious mental issues, right? But the first question I have for you is, and this is something that's been going around the internet, by the way, just so you're aware of it too. Jackie is dead, but did Jackie die out in the wild?
I'm assuming she did, but we don't know it for a fact. But just the way that the brunch went with Melanie Lynskey and her husband and the way they were talking with Jackie's parents, I felt like it gave the impression she never came back after that trip.
So here's the thing. I agree that the show has implied that multiple times. I, for some reason, just gut instinct early on was like, I bet you they're trying to make it look like she's dead, but she's really not dead, right? Or not dead at that moment. Mm-hmm. And here's what the internet sleuths have discovered. In the diary, when they're flipping through Jackie's diary, and you see they're like playing games on the pages and stuff, that they have like their list of their favorite movies. Jackie has movies that came out after 1996 on that notepad.
Yes, I actually saw that too in my COVID-induced haze. I was kind of like Googling around about this show. So yes, there is that, I suppose. I mean, that would be a very big slip on the part right. of whoever was putting together that list, and a very strange one, because that would, you'd obviously be researching movies that are current to that time period.
Right. So, and especially because also just the weirdness of them putting that on the screen at that point, it seemed yeah. like they're giving you an Easter egg, right? That's why else put it there? Yeah,
that's fair. That's fair.
So that would be a mystery that, you know, she did survive. Maybe this is something that gets explored later in the series, because it will be on for multiple years, theoretically, if it continues to be successful. That, in other words, they did come back, and maybe they didn't make it when they came back, right? Which makes perfect sense considering what the ordeal they went through, right?
Maybe. I have to say she's my number one candidate for the cannibalism menu. So I don't know.
Here's the other reason. Even from the very start, I felt like even in the very first episode, that's not actually Jackie who is cannibalized there in that opening sequence, yeah. or even dead, because whether they eat the person or not, that person definitely falls into a trap, right? A bear trap. Mm-hmm. It was even details I didn't pick up, but other people, you know, from my internet research had picked up. But it's like the necklace around her neck is Jackie's necklace. It's the color of her neck, the color of her hair, etc. But it's that they make it all vague enough where they basically are saying, this is Jackie. But I'm like, is it Jackie? You know what I mean? Like, it's like they're keeping it just vague enough to be like, you know, like that's going to be like the twist that's yeah. coming later potentially. And, yeah. But I've been suspecting it all season long. And the fact that I've been suspecting it for so long makes me feel like it is possibly the case.
Okay.
But I would find it more interesting. We've been watching this whole show, assuming that the vast majority of the people who survived initially didn't make it back, then to only find out that most of them did make it back. And, you know, in other words, they had so many problems after that they've been dropping like flies a little at a time.
Right? I mean, Jackie's definitely dead now. That we know.
Yes, she's definitely dead now. Correct, correct. You know, that she didn't die out in the wild at that time initially, in 96, basically.
Right.
Okay, so next question. What the hell is up with Misty? No, that's too vague. But I'll add some context to that with the whole, initially when I was going to talk about, before I decided to do the Scream recap and last episode, I was originally going to do a, you know, deep dive on Yellow Jackets, but I decided to keep it till this week so we could talk about it. But my originally was going to say the sociopath of the week is Misty from Yellow Jackets,
right?
Because she had just like drugged somebody and everything, right? But then I was like, you know what? But she thinks she's doing the right thing. So is she really, does she fit the definition of a sociopath? And then this week I was like, hold on a second. Shauna is a sociopath because she is, you know, doing horrible things to other people purely to kind of preserve this version of herself, which is obviously not a realistic version of herself. And then by the end of the episode, I'm like, hold on a second, no, Misty is a sociopath. So I'm like, are they both sociopaths? And then of course the girls have their meltdown and their, you know,
yes, doom coming.
Their doom coming. And I'm like, are they all sociopaths? What's happening?
Yes.
And this is kind of really fascinating twist, by the way, in this very week. I'm like, who is blackmailing the girls? And it was interesting. I had thought about it multiple times. Shauna's not being blackmailed. Why is Shauna being not blackmailed? And then I was like, well, maybe there is this guy, this Adam guy, is the one. And Adam's basically working his angle a different way. And it turns out it is so mundane, but shocking in a way, that it's her husband who's been blackmailing the other women. And he needs the money, not because he wants to like destroy their political careers or anything like that. He just needs the cash.
Yep. Absolutely.
That was such a big shock. I thought it was great this week, by the way, the whole realization that these people are married together, you know, in the same house, living together, that he's read her diaries. He knows all these secrets. And he's been keeping it from her this whole entire time. And meanwhile, you know, he's been
a marriage that they have.
I think they both have guilt around, you know, the origin of their relationship, obviously, right?
Yes, for sure.
And just for people who are catching on now, you know, haven't watched the show, but basically Shauna's husband, Jeff, was in a relationship, long-term relationship with Jackie when they were kids. But meanwhile, Jackie was trying to stay pure, had never had sex with Jeff. And Shauna, who's supposed to be like a wallflower, was having sex with Jeff. So that's another another indicator throughout her whole entire life that Shauna has this need to transgress. She's like all the perfect girl on the outside, but inside she has this need to be transgressive, right? And I don't think she would ever admit that about herself, which I find very interesting about her character. Don't you think?
I mean, she also is living in Jackie's shadow.
Yeah.
And I think that is influencing a lot of her decision.
I mean, so you're saying that even when she was younger, she was dealing with that. And now she continues to because of this, like she's haunted by Jackie even now. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, I think so.
I find Shauna by far is really the core of the show. I think she's the most interesting character. And I think show is written around her, right? You would agree?
Yeah, I agree. And I think even taking the plane crash out of it, which is the main premise of the show, I think there's a lot just going on there about, and we've talked about this before in the context of Mayor of Easttown, you know, middle-aged people have relationships and what it is to be in a relationship with someone over decades of time and the way you know each other and the way things change and how you change. And there's a lot to be explored there, I think, even outside the plane crash context.
I agree. Poor Travis, by the way, you know, who I feel bad for him when he's younger and then to find out that he's just been murdered in the present tense. I mean, I don't think that actor who plays him in the present tense does anything other than smile at Natalie in her recollections of him. I mean, I don't think he gets to speak a word of a dialogue. Yeah. The next thing is, you already touched on it before, you don't want something supernatural to be the case here. But, you know, I think that you can make a very strong argument that Thaisa was mentally ill and continues to be mentally ill, right? She's like eating dirt and climbing up in trees in the middle of the night.
Yeah, you know, there's a thing, I haven't looked it up in the context of this show. There's a thing of like people being driven to eat dirt by their body craving it. I think it's called pica.
Yes.
I haven't looked it up though.
During pregnancy too, it's often the case.
Yeah, something about like the minerals in there or something, right? So like, I mean, I think there actually could be a logical explanation for why she's eating dirt.
But she's also sleepwalking and.
Yeah. And climbing trees. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it could be beyond that. I mean, like their dog disappeared, and you know, this is present tense. And she sees the man with no eyes, and she sees a wolf outside in the street.
Right. I forgot about that.
And she painted spill on her own door, and like
that is
so.
The conclusion we have, yes.
Yeah. So there's quite a lot of other indicators that
dirt isn't my main concern.
Yeah. Yes. No. Yeah. So that could be. It could be pica going on as well as sheer total mental illness. And that's the other thing too. Is like you could have pica and you could have sleepwalking, which does happen. But some of this other stuff seems to be a little more problematic.
I agree.
And apparently, I mean, I do think that there might be some kind of mental illness, and maybe the grandmother, you know, who had visions as well. Maybe the grandmother had mental illness, and maybe the son also. Although some of the things that we thought the son was the one, it's kind of funny the way that the show did this. They made us think that maybe the son was seeing things, right?
Yeah.
And then it's just like, no, the crazy lady in the trees was her mom. Was his mom?
Yeah. And they're gaslighting him. You know, this
totally.
Crazy in the tree.
She's a terrible mother, by the way. She's gaslighting her own son. That's terrible. That's a terrible, terrible mom. So yeah. So what is up with Thaisa? Oh, and then, of course, the other one is what the hell is up with Lottie? But I got to tell you, that's why I know you don't want to hear anything supernatural, but I don't know. Lottie seems to know a lot of stuff that actually does happen. And that whole thing where the you know, you see the camera zooming through the window when she's doing the when they're doing the seance. Mm. And she's supposedly speaking French. And, you know, that guy Jacques lived in the cabin, so maybe he was French. Seems like something's going on out there.
Oh, I don't want there to be.
And the symbols. What is up with the symbols?
Yeah, I don't know what's up with the symbols.
That's the thing that's interesting about the show right now is there's actually would be pretty funny to set up this whole lost, like, you know, mythology. And then to find out the whole thing is just a bunch of hysterical people. And that turns out to be like not supernatural at all. And although I think that's very funny that to kind of make that pivot in the show, some of this stuff is so out there. I'm like, I don't know. Like, you know, we see the symbol carved into the trees. We see the symbol carved into the cabins. And then most importantly is when we see Travis has been killed or suicided, either way, it doesn't matter if whether it was suicide or murder, that like what was up with the candles being arranged in that pattern at under his body, right? Like that's pretty strange stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I felt like that particular thing, I'll go with it. That was kind of a forced symbology, I felt like. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to draw lines. Like yeah. if it was all straight lines, I could buy it more, but there were some curved lines in there too, if I recall correctly. I mean, that's kind of discretion when to curve a line or draw a straight line. I don't know. But I'll go with it. It's fine.
but to your point, it could just be like a coincidence and they're like, you know, just looking for this symbol and everything. But it still would be very strange that someone was burning all those candles. You know, we're not talking about like one candle. Like yeah. there just randomly was a candle there. Yeah. There was like dozens of candles burned under his body. Like, well, what were they doing there? Right. Yeah. So,
yeah.
And of course, the fact that someone would know that symbol on a, you know, and the postcards and stuff. Now we know exactly what that was about and right. the text. So that's not a mystery anymore. So in a lot of ways, they've made a lot of these things mundane. Like I said, there's still a lot of weirdness here that I don't know if we can explain it yet. And maybe, I mean, I hope anyway, that with the finale, they crystallize the direction the show is going to go into, right? Honestly, I think that if they're going to do a fake out where they're saying, well, this isn't really a supernatural thing at all. Like, I don't think they can make that revelation this early in the show. Like you can't just have if the show's going to last more than one season, you can't just wrap it up at the end of season one. Yeah. No one will come back for season two, right? And I don't know what's going to happen next week. You know, they're going to have their reunion, class reunion. I'm very curious to see the class reunion because some of these girls I think did survive. They might have just moved away from New Jersey, but they might be out there and they may have survived.
Right.
And we may see them at the reunion next week. So that would be interesting to see. Right. Yeah, so that's mostly what I had. I had a lot more questions for you, honestly, before I caught up, because they've really answered most of them.
Good for them. They actually tried to them.
right. And I think there's still the overarching mystery of like what was really happening there. But right now, I'll tell you that the show until very recently, until maybe like last week, I kind of felt like they kept adding more and more and more layers to the mystery without really answering anything. Although I do feel like they're starting to close some of those boxes now, but I was enjoying it anyway. I'm like, I might get frustrated with it eventually, but I wasn't yet frustrated with it, basically.
Time is inching along. You know how I feel about that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would like to see a little more progression, but I am really interested in these characters and what's going on with them. So I am patient because I like to see the character development and how the relationships are shifting and how they came to be what they are in the present day. So that's keeping me pretty intrigued for the time being, at least.
I agree. I think that's the pull that keeps me coming back. I also think that the show is very funny the way it's written, and you know, in my sense of humor anyway. Like, I think that Shauna having these little mental breakdowns is very entertaining to watch. And she's just funny without really trying, you know. And
her husband is very funny in his way as well. Right. Not purposefully necessarily, but I mean, the line might be written to be purposely funny, but I think he's just supposed to be a little bit slow. But even in this last episode, his like, I'm incredulous, there's no book club.
Yes.
Very funny, because this lady was claiming to go to book club, it seemed like three times a week.
All the time, exactly. It's interesting because I loved last week when Shauna, you know, confronts her daughter for Halloween, I guess it is. And when is homecoming, by the way? So they're going to a Halloween party, and then did they have Thanksgiving yet? Thanksgiving is homecoming, right?
I feel like it's supposed to be around now, yeah.
Because that's when everybody comes home, right? We all come home for Thanksgiving, right? That's how it, Yeah,
I guess so.
First of all, you know, her daughter's been such a bitch to her this whole entire time. And then her daughter has that moment where she, you know, if have an honest conversation about like how their marriage has been going and you know how things are. And she gives her mom some props. And then the next morning, she goes right back into bitchy teenager mode. And she's like, Mom, I don't have to comply with any rules you've set. Shauna was just great where she goes, okay, well, yeah, I'll get divorced.
Let me lay out what the rest of your life will look like if you do that.
Exactly. There go all our savings, including your college fund. Oh, you get to live with your dad in an apartment and wait till he starts dating girls who are barely over your age. Yeah. What a nightmare. So that was great. So Shauna was like really in the height of her powers there. But then Shauna makes some really stupid decisions. And a perfect example of that this week is when she kills Adam, which was crazy.
crazy.
But then I love how that whole thing played out this week. It's bananas. Like, she has that whole situation, then goes to her husband. Like, you know, I guess she had to confront him anyway, because he was their blackmailer, right? Yeah. But I loved how that all played out. That is just like, he's like, I wasn't cheating on you. She was working with the people who I borrowed the money from, you know, the whole thing playing out. And he, like you said, him be so naively being like, wait a second, there's no book club. Mm-hmm. What a mess. What a mess that she's in. Jesus.
Yes.
And now Crazy Misty has to come to dispose of the body for them. When you need a body disposed of, who else will you call?
She's for this moment.
That's the kind of comedy that I love in the show, which is so grim. But then the comedy is so funny, like when Juliette Lewis shows up, Natalie, and Misty's like, I'm so sick of you. What do you want from me now? And Natalie says to her, I don't only come here when I need some from you. And, you know, you're really good at some things. And she said, pays her all these compliments. And then she's like, well, now that I said all those things, I actually do need you to do something for me. And it's pretty big. I need you to dispose of a body. Oh, I look how they're always like, Misty will know how to do that.
I mean, that does seem to be the theme of the show.
She reads a lot of books.
She really does.
And that's part of the reason they're there, right? The flight recorder got smashed because she's just like, wow, I'm my full self here. Yeah. I've got to smash this flight recorder. I
did all my skills.
Oh my God. And she's trapped with the coach she's in love with.
Who's gay, gay, gay.
Yeah, gay, gay, gay. She's screaming from the mountaintops. She hacks off his leg. I mean, well, the leg was lost at that point. So that's the show up until this point. We got only one episode to go. I can't wait to see what happens in the finale. I honestly don't know. Can't imagine what's going to happen next on the show. Yeah. It could. And I mean that, like, not even like, you know, UFOs are going to land. I like this in the best possible way. Next week could be them just hanging out at the reunion, like having awkward conversations with everybody, trying to, like, you know, or try to talk around clumsy conversations. And that could be the whole show. And that would be fine. Or we could have some kind of crazy revelation about what happened in the past, right? So it could be any one of those things, right?
Excited to see what the finale is going to be. I'm excited to see if it's going to be a cliffhanger of some sort. Hoping we don't get too far into the cannibalism, because I don't want to get too far into cannibalism. That can wait for me until next year. Looking forward to it.
Kevin, thanks for the conversation and feel better. Hope you recover nicely.
Yeah. Oh, thank
and
you.
And your family too.
Thanks.
All right. Great. I'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you later.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye. Head is full of magic, baby, and I can't share this with you. I feel I'm on top again, baby, that's got everything to do with you.